Hello, good evening and welcome everyone to this meeting of Stafford Borough Council's Planning Committee. My name is Brendan McKeown and I will be chairing this meeting this evening. Just a couple of points before we start. If you have a mobile phone, can you switch it off or switch it to mute, please? And can I ask members of the public to refrain from commenting from the public gallery during discussion by members? On my right, I have officers from the Planning Department, and on my left, I have officers from the Law and Governance Department. Officers from the Planning Department will present each application. Members of the public who have indicated to speak will be given 3 minutes, and I will indicate when they've used up 2 of those minutes. Ward members who are speaking are entitled to speak up to 5 minutes, and again I'll let them know when they have 1 minute to go. An audio recording is being taken of this meeting and it will be published on the Council's website. Members of the committee are reminded that they do not enjoy any immunity as that enjoyed by our colleagues in Parliament. Members may only deal with the planning applications before them in accordance with national planning policy frameworks and the Stafford Borough local plan, together with any other relevant planning matters. So that's the first bit out of the way. We move on to the agenda, and the first item on the agenda is apologies. Oh, minutes of the previous meeting from 22nd of April. Anyone?
Minutes, correct.
Okay, thank you. I'll sign those. So we have apologies.
Yes, Chairman. Apologies received this evening from Councillor Cross, who is substituted by Councillor Anne Edgula, Councillor Anne Hobbs, who is substituted by Councillor Julian Thorley, Councillor Peter Jones, who is substituted by Councillor Louise Nixon, and Councillor Dee McNaughton, who hasn't wanted a substitute.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Right. Give me a moment. Okay. So the first item I'm going to ask members to consider is just reordering.
Declaration of members' interest in lobbying.
Oh yeah, right. Anyone have any delegated applications? We've done that. Declarations of members' interest or lobbying. Scott.
Yep. I, as always, work for Severn Trent, but have no bearing on their decisions.
Okay. Thank you. Noted. Delegated applications are circulated separately. And now we come on to item 5, the planning applications. And I'm going to ask members if they would consider just moving the order around a little bit so that item 3, as it appears on your agenda, land adjacent to page 41, Acorn Cottage in Stone by Chartley, which is featured or starts on page 44. If you are in agreement, then we move that one up to the first item tonight for discussion, as the chairman of Stow by Chartley Council, Parish Council, is with us and has to get back to Stow by Chartley to chair a meeting there. Is everyone okay to do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you. So now I'll hand over to planning officer to deal with Acorn Cottage, Joynton Lane, application number 25/412/86.
Myself, Chair, thank you. So the site comprises a parcel of land situated in between two residential dwellings and within the rural settlement of Stow by Chartley. The site is located in open countryside in policy terms. The land historically appears to have formed part of the residential parcel to Acorn Cottage, which is here. I don't know if you can see my cursor actually. However, today is clearly separated from this dwelling by an established hedgerow. The current application seeks permission for the erection of a single dormer bungalow on site. It is stated that the dwelling is proposed to be constructed to passive house plus standards, which based on the submitted report would have a near zero heating demand and would be a significant producer of its own renewable energy. So the site was edged in red there. This is the existing site, so we've got surrounding hedgerows and adjacent properties. This is the proposed site layout where we've got three car parking spaces. You can see solar panels proposed onto the rear elevation there, and the hedgerows to be set back to allow for vehicle access and visibility. And there's another site layout. This is 3D view from St John's Close, which is just the side edge of the farm. We've got floor layouts there, so it's supposed to be a four bedroom house. These are the proposed elevations. So we've got timber cladding and bricks of the lower walls. Proposed roof plan showing the solar panels proposed. And that's more of a technical drawing to show the section between the slab and the external wall. So just to show you some photographs of the site.
Chairman,
would it be possible to speak up? Because apologies. Thank you. So, get back to the show, so this is a view from Droynton Lane, look, facing towards Acorn Cottage there. So the site is fronted by hedgerow, abutting the Droynton Lane at present. There's a view facing the other way towards Green Hills, again off Droynton Lane. A view from inside the site, but facing towards Acorn Cottage. There's a view facing south, you can see the bungalows off St John's Close there. Facing west, I believe, towards Green Hills again. Facing south, and then facing north towards the hedgerow, which abuts Droynton Lane. I'll just take you back to the plan. So in terms of issues, the site falls outside of any designated settlement boundary, and in policy terms is located within open countryside. In this respect, the proposal would conflict with the spatial strategy set out within the borough's local plan. However, Stafford Borough do not currently have a 5-year housing land supply, and policies in relation to new market housing are therefore out of date. Consequently, the National Planning Policies Framework Total Balance set out in paragraph 11 applies. And this sets out a presumption in favour of sustainable development. The proposal is considered to be of an innovative design which promotes high levels of sustainability. This is afforded significant weight by the MPPF.
Can you speak up a bit more? Sorry, people can't
hear you.
Subject to conditions, the proposal is considered acceptable in terms of highway safety, residential amenity, flood risk and ecology. And having regard to the balance set out in paragraph 11 of the MPPF, it is recommended planning permission be granted subject to the conditions listed in the report. Since publication of the report, we've received 3 additional neighbour representations raising objections to the proposal, and 3 representations from Stowe by Charlie Parish Council. These representations raise concerns surrounding highway safety, the location of the site in open countryside, flood risk, residential amenity and design. These matters are covered in the relevant sections of the report.
Okay, we have 2 people who wish to speak on this, one as an objector and one as a supporter. I am required to ask the objector to speak first. This will be Mr. Peter Coote, if you'd like to come to the table. And I do apologise, this is not the greatest room for hearing things, and we've tried microphones, they didn't work. So, welcome Peter.
Thank you.
You have 3 minutes. And
I'll let you know, 3 minutes.
Well, it's up to you. When you get to 2, I'll give you a little reminder. So ready when you are.
Thank you. Forgive me for reading a lot of this, but I don't want to mislead you by misquoting documents. The parish council at its meeting agreed that the council objects to this application as the road floods, there are drainage issues, and it is generally out of keeping with its environs. I shall be brief because everything I want to talk about is on the portal, which I'm sure you've all read. There was a very good document that came from one of the neighbours that talked about the recurring flood issues over a number of years, which seemed to be increasing in recent times. In its report, posted on the portal on the 12th of February, the County Council, the local lead flood authority, quoted, "During periods of heavy rainfall, surface water flow paths are shown to develop and are conveyed through the development site by the natural topography of the surrounding land. The land under proposal is therefore at risk of flooding, and without suitable mitigation measures and an appropriate site layout, any new property would be at risk of surface water flooding. The LLFA would advise an objection on the application at this time due to the risk of surface water flooding to the proposed property and its impact upon flooding to third-party land in the vicinity." It's this final part of the quote which I think is most telling. If the application is approved this evening, and if there are not major all-encompassing mitigation measures, neighbours and road users will bear the brunt of surface water flooding. There is another report that was commissioned by Foulshaw Homes, posted on the portal on the 14th of April, which says, "To prevent the displacement of surface water and maintain the existing surface water flow route, a swale with a depth of 0.25 metres is proposed along the southern and western boundaries of the site. The feature will ensure that any surface water displaced by the proposed development is retained within the site boundary. A geocellular attenuation tank providing approximately 59.4 cubic metres is proposed to limit discharge rates of 0.21 litres per second."
1 minute, Peter.
Thank you. The report, they go on to recommend positioning of electrical sockets at a raised height, types of self-closing air bricks to be used, and the positioning of external cable or entry points 0.3 metres above ground level. The report continues, "These recommendations seek to negate any outstanding flood risk." The last statement is interesting in two ways. I'm sure that the report seeks to negate flood risk, but the use of the word seek does not provide any guarantee that flood risk will be negated, nor even minimised. Indeed, further to that, recommendation of flood prevention building measures suggests strongly that the report writers fully accept that the mitigation measures will not prevent surface flooding. The planning application before you and the entries on the planning portal have included reports on surface flooding from two professional bodies, one seeking approval, one seeking rejection.
It's asking you to wind it up.
The report from the company commissioned by Foulshaw Homes is attempting to persuade you that the surface flooding can be mitigated successfully. The report from Staffordshire Council has been produced by professionals who have to maintain an independent stance. The latter report is convincing and is persuasive.
Okay, Peter.
I ask you to reject the
application. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I now have a supporter, Mr. Rob Hughes. Rob, you have 3 minutes as well, and I'll let you know when you're 2 minutes into it.
Okay, thank you. Good evening, Chair, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to start by thanking your case officer for the preparation of such a detailed report in which the planning merits of the case having regard to the development plan, material considerations and case law are clearly set out. The proposal comprises the erection of a new passive house plus dwelling on an infill plot within the settlement of Stoke by Chartley. In 2019, the council declared a climate emergency with a commitment to achieve carbon neutrality by 2040. A commitment that has since been brought forward to 2035. Whilst members may be familiar with passive house design, this particular proposal has gone further in proposing a rigour of sustainable design and construction for a standard of dwelling for which there are only 20 certified projects to date in the UK. The passive house plus classification is part of a newer generation of standards intended to push buildings from merely being efficient to being net positive generators of energy. Whilst achieving exemplary levels of energy efficiency in a building of more contemporary design, the height, scale, sighting, layout, parking and garden arrangements of the proposal all conform to the character and appearance of the surrounding area. Members will be aware of government guidance that requires designers not to simply replicate what has gone before, but to encourage and support architecture and design that has an eye on the past but a clear focus to the future. The committee report sets out in much greater detail the planning policy framework, which provides the support and justification for the proposal. We are aware of some objections from a small number of neighbours to the proposal, which is regretful. We appreciate that not all proposals receive full support. However, in this particular case, the merits of the proposal are clear, and the tilted balance in favour of the grant of planning permission forms a legal basis for decision making. There are no adverse impacts that would significantly and demonstrably outweigh the benefits taken as a whole.
1 minute, Rob.
There are no technical objections to the scheme, and all considerations including drainage and highway safety have been subject to scrutiny. The local lead flood risk authority have raised no objections to the proposal following the submission of the report on drainage. Members will be mindful of the support for the proposal from its own design advisor and the list of conditions which will ensure that the detailed aspects of the scheme are subject to approval. We endorse your officer's recommendation for approval and respectfully ask members to be equally supportive of what is an outstanding and unique development. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Well timed. If you could just go back. No. Ward Member Councillor Francis Beattie, do you wish to speak?
I will.
Thank you. You have 5 minutes, as you know.
Thank you. Members, I've researched the premium of building to Passive House standard. The cost has dropped over recent years to about 5 to 15%, and it continues to drop, which is easily retrievable for developers in the added sale price. It's being achieved by builders across the country and even local authorities, and I've no doubt that it's a good thing, and that the plus that the applicant mentions is going to be a very good thing as well, because it tightens up the commitment to energy saving. But the NPPF's asking for something else. In rural areas, it's demanding exceptional and innovative quality housing and landscaping as exceptions to the rule. Exceptional quality housing is something more than generic industry standards, even at plus, however good, and our design advisor makes that point. Does this proposed dwelling meet the specific criteria related to architectural evidence? It's good, but no, it doesn't. Does it meet the criteria for excellence in landscape design? No, it doesn't. Does it meet the standard for innovation? No, it's using an enhanced off-the-shelf package. And our design advisor, in trying to make a case for the scheme as innovative, is actually equivocal if you read his report. And the design advisor produces no evidence that the built house would raise the standard of house builders across the borough. The market will do that. Is it possible that, having been turned down twice on the grounds that the site's not suitable, the developers produced a contemporary formula as a device to win approval that wouldn't otherwise be approved? What if the developer comes back for modification, as implied in the officer's report at 4.7, where they cautiously use the word "provided that the building is constructed strictly in accordance with the submitted drawings"? There's no reference in the conditions to an enforceable requirement to implement passive house compliance. There's no strategy in the local plan that relates to it. So, turning to the NPPF criteria for exceptional landscaping, the fundamental point that the appeal inspectors made on the outline site was that the green space is part of the dispersed housing pattern of this village. The application fails to offer quality of landscape design. It's infill. It's surprising that our design advisor feels that the site represents a natural infill development opportunity. The application goes against every recommendation of the Stow by Chartley Housing Needs Survey. Staffordshire Highways recommends refusal on the grounds of sustainable transport, as does our forward planning department. There's inadequate visibility from the exit. It's a very narrow country lane, no footways, inadequate street lighting. The proposed site's on the cusp of a 60-mile-an-hour zone and the lane's used as a rat run. Importantly, the visual display would encroach on gardens at Greenhills and the Acorn Cottages verge. They're not owned by the applicant, and so the proposal is not achievable, even under the County Council's alternative ideas for conditions. Extreme flooding problems are highlighted by planning inspectors and the PC representative here, who you've heard from. The proposed solution is clumsy, it's challenging. It would fall entirely on the house owner maintaining swales, tanks, and clearing debris, even if it solved any of the problems. It will be the other properties that suffer. The application asserts to be exceptional in terms of NPPF environmental credentials, yet proposes to discharge surface runoff into sewers, provides no space for a garage, no indication of refuse and recycling storage areas.
1 minute, Councillor Beale.
Which is sensitively located and designed according to the Borough Council design guide. Where will the heat pump be sited? It's outside the development envelope. It doesn't offer exceptional and innovative quality housing and landscape. The reasons for dismissal at Appeal 21 must be given due weight, including siting, flooding, transport and traffic. It doesn't meet paragraph 9 of the NPPF, that local planning policy should take local circumstances into account. It should be refused in terms of sustainable development and sustainable transport. There are major unresolved flooding and drainage issues affecting the location, okay, including surface runoff.
Thank you.
Have
you got long to go? No? Finished?
No,
oh, absolutely. Right on 5 minutes. Well,
can I just say, if permission were granted, the most stringent commission with conditions are going to have to be applied and enforced.
Thank you very much. You may stay there, yeah, if you wish to. Okay, so you've heard from the officers, you've heard from a supporter and an objector, and from the ward member. Who would like to start the discussion? Councillor Andy McNaughton.
Yeah, well, on the flooding, I've just read 7.1, where it says the local flood advisors say the swale will mitigate any flooding. So I would rather go with them on that issue, because they're like the county council and there are experts in that area.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Scott Spencer.
A couple of points, but I'll start with this one, because it links in 7.2, with the local flood authority mentioned Severn Trent should be consulted regards sewage and so forth. And then it says here there's been no representation. Do we know exactly why they need to be considered? And is there an issue there in that respect?
Part of the drainage strategy was to channel some of the surface water into the foul sewer, which is located on Droynton Lane.
Right.
Yeah.
So, are we saying that the drainage strategy that's been created includes that aspect? Of Severn Trent have got to agree to that before this is acceptable?
Well, essentially the scheme probably wouldn't go ahead if they didn't agree to it, or they wouldn't be able to comply with the conditions we've suggested.
Okay.
But it wouldn't prevent us granting planning permission, it would just mean they couldn't implement the scheme.
So is that the case, would that therefore then make the planning, if it, let's say, was accepted, be voided?
Essentially, yeah.
Okay. Did anyone not hear that conversation at all? Are you okay with that interchange? Yeah? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? I'm sure you've got this.
I'll go again.
Okay. Councillor Scott Spencer.
I also note that the development isn't meeting BNG requirements, and that the applicant has proposed to purchase units off site. Mm-hmm. I then see that there's not condition related to that. If this was to be accepted, could that be conditioned?
It would be subject to a standard the NG condition, yeah.
It doesn't appear, I can't see that condition.
It's a standard condition that gets put on anything.
Where BNG applies,
so it doesn't automatically appear in a list of conditions, but it automatically goes up to the decision notice.
Would you like to ask the applicant or the applicant's agent to comment on the BNG?
If they're able to.
Yeah, I'm happy to do so.
Would that be helpful?
Thank you. As explained, basically any development that is now requiring to deliver BNG, not every development has to, but our scheme will. There's a minimum, there's a sort of a legal requirement to deliver 10% BNG. In this case, we're going to be delivering that through an Enviro Bank, basically. But it's an accepted condition of any planning decision with BNG now. So it will be, it'll have to be delivered, basically. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's helpful. Any more?
On a sustainable transport, Highways Authority say that for every rural development, because there isn't necessarily a footpath or a cycle path in most rural houses, and they're there already, so I'm not sure we should take too much notice of that. And plus they were talking about pushing the hedge back a bit to improve the access or the visibility when they access the road.
Doing well here tonight.
Apologies. I also noticed Councillor Beattie's comments there about the submission display onto neighbouring properties. If I'm reading this plan correctly, it indicates the vision display is wholly within this property's sort of red edge. Is that correct?
Yeah.
It is. Okay. Okay. Good. And secondly, discussed about the passive house and if the developer can be sort of shoehorned, for better word, to maintain that and to continue going down that line. Could that be sort of like hard-boiled to some extent into a condition?
We could add an additional condition to ensure that we've got evidence that it has been constructed to those standards.
Right. So that could be conditioned, should we?
If members feel that necessary, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Any more? Councillor Anne Hedgler.
Thank you very much, Chairman. And yes, really, I'd like to ask the officer, I mean, looking at the highway, and highway recommended refusal, we always take into consideration what highways are saying. So I'd like to ask the officer why it's down for acceptance when the highways are saying for refusal, or what can be done to eliminate this problem.
I don't know if you read the report at 5.15, this application did go to appeal previously, and the inspector at that point accepted that there are no highway safety issues, and this access arrangement is similar to that previously refused scheme. So essentially that's been assessed at the previous appeal and was deemed acceptable.
Alexander,
yeah, just on that point, why is the difference, why is there such a big difference in the visibility displays from 43 metres then?
Essentially, the inspector accepted the more limited visibility that's shown. This access arrangement was shown on the previous scheme that the inspector reviewed, and it's identical, essentially. Is that right, Bob? Yeah.
Any more? It's quite complex around the highways, I appreciate that, but it would appear as if highways to some extent are saying because of the circumstances here they don't need the 43 metres because the speed is less than the inspector.
The highway authority have stuck to that view, but the inspector took a different view.
Okay. Scott?
Mm-hmm. It mentions about the attenuation tank. Where's that to be sited, do you know?
We don't have the drainage document on this presentation, but it was going to be on the front driveway.
Right there.
Here.
With the swales
the
either side.
And the swale would be on this boundary.
Just on the one boundary, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then feeding into that attenuation tank somehow. Is it the swale?
Yes, I mean, it's all set out in the submitted drainage report. But
Anyone else wish to speak at all? No. So, it comes to that point where I have to ask you if anyone wants to make a proposal. Councillor Scott Spencer?
Can I propose that we accept the application, but with some additional conditions related to the passive house standard and maintaining that as a sort of locked in design statement or target?
Clarification upon completion of the dwelling of construction.
Yes.
Yeah.
So can I just add that it should include the certification as well?
Yeah, okay.
So not just the.
We've got proposal to accept with some conditions.
Sorry, we need to vote on that condition. That's
yes,
an amendment.
Okay, right. We need someone to
just
second.
Just that condition, so we need a seconder for
need
that.
Need someone to second that condition. Councillor Andy Norton, so we're now going to vote on that condition.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so can you read out that for us, Lee, please? If you have it, or do you want Hannah to do it?
Hannah can do it.
Hannah.
The
condition.
So essentially it would be that post completion of the dwelling, the applicants would need to provide evidence to verify that the house has been constructed to passive house plus standards.
Is that?
Certified evidence.
Including certification.
Yeah. Okay, so you know what you're voting on now. All in support of that condition, please indicate. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And I'll vote for that condition. And any against? Any abstain?
1 abstain.
3 abstain.
Okay.
Right. So now we've established that any approval would need to have that condition applied to it. So do you want to now propose?
Yes, please, Chair.
Okay. Does anyone want to second councillor? So it's proposed by Councillor Scott Spencer, seconded by Councillor Andy McNaughton to approve this application with those conditions. Yes?
Yep.
Correct? All those who support that proposal?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
6.
And abstentions? Or against, rather?
Against.
You're against? Mm-hmm. 2 against. Any abstentions? Okay, right, so that application is approved subject to those conditions. Thank you very much. We now go back to the agenda and go back to the original item number. If you are leaving us, please leave quietly. Thank you. We'll give you a few moments. And I know you're going to go about quarter past, aren't you?
Shall I go now?
It's up to you. It's probably a good idea.
It's a serial list, but I won't walk on
anything. Yeah, yeah.
Which
you will. It's a good idea.
She's not going to be here today.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So probably a good idea if you were to leave at this juncture.
Yeah, I'm going.
There you go. Okay, so planning application 24/39/849, change of use, land at Marston Meadow, Marston Lane, Marston. Who's going to present this one? Sean, okay. Sorry, can you... thank you. Okay, Sean, go for it.
This application, 24/39/849, change of use. We've got one update since the agenda was published. We've had an additional letter objecting to the proposal, raising concerns relating to noise, traffic, and activity levels. The letter states that no noise impact assessment has been undertaken and that there's no reliance on operational controls and that there's highway safety concerns. The letter also states it would result in a loss of immunity. So that's one additional objection letter since the report and agenda were published. So moving on to the presentation, the application site is a parcel of land situated between Marston Lane and Yarlett Lane, and planning permission is sought for change of use of the field to a dog walking field. Other works include the erection of a secure timber post and wire fence and a parking and turning area for vehicles. The submission states that the field would work on private bookings only and accommodate no more than four dogs, three people and two parking spaces per booking. It's been confirmed that there would be a coded padlock on the gate for which the code would be given out when a booking reminder is sent out. And the bookings would operate in 50-minute sessions, allowing for a 10-minute changeover period between users. In policy terms, it's considered that the use constitutes an appropriate form of rural diversification that will contribute to the growth of the rural economy and provide a service for the local community. The fencing is considered visually acceptable and no objections have been raised by the conservation officer. In terms of amenity, neighbour representations are noted, which raise concerns about residential amenity, particularly noise from dogs. Environmental health have suggested opening times, which are considered to be reasonable. They are Monday to Friday 8 till 6, Saturday 8 till 2, and not on Sundays or bank holidays. Based on these times, it's not considered that the proposal would result in any undue harm to residential amenity. The proposal includes four parking spaces. The Highway Authority do not raise any objections. They do, however, recommend a number of conditions which are set out in paragraph 7.4 of the report. There's no objections from any other technical consultees, and overall the proposal is considered to support rural diversification and is acceptable in all of the matters. So I'll just run through the presentation. So we've got a red edge plan which shows the site area, which is located on agricultural land between Marston Lane and Yarlett Lane. We can see an aerial view there, again showing the site area. We've got quite a lot of photographs actually, 12 photographs which are mainly taken around the perimeter of the site. So I'll just run through those. Image one is taken from the public right of way looking towards Wayside in the distance and shows the field itself proposed for change of use. Image two is also taken from a public right of way looking towards the southwest, showing the extent of the field. Image three.
I'm asking it to move.
Oh, there we go. Image three shows the public right of way itself heading northwest and shows the security fencing which is already in situ. It's going to jump forward loads now, isn't it? Image four, here you can see. It's okay, keep it on five. Image four, it's just basically the application field and a gated entrance. We've moved on to number five, which again is the public right of way. You can see the fencing, so it's already in place. Take it to six. Oh dear. Got a few technical problems here. Image six shows the field near to the access with the field beyond.
Taking a few seconds to skip.
Okay, seven taken from the entrance again, showing the fencing already in situ, so you can see the entrance gate there, and you can see that there is fencing in the background. It's a post and wire type of fence. And again, on image 8. Apologies, this is. There we go. Image 9 shows the main gates into the site where the parking area would be situated just beyond those gates. And then image 10 shows Marston Lane taken near to the entrance of the site looking towards the entrance of Wayside. image 11 shows the junction near Marston Lane, looking towards Yarlett Lane. And finally, we've got one more image taken from the roadside looking towards St Leonard's Church. St Leonard's Church is in close proximity to the site, but as I've previously mentioned, there's been no objections raised on conservation grounds. Only got two plans. The first plan again shows the red edge extent of the site. It shows the parking spaces, which are just inside the gate. The fencing would go around the perimeter, most of which is already in situ. And then finally on plan two, we can see the visibility splays there, and there is some new hedgerow to be planted 1 metre behind where the visibility splays sit. So some hedgerow will be removed, but then replanted. The application is recommended for approval, subject to the conditions set out in the report.
Thank you, Sean. We have two people who wish to speak on this, an objector and a supporter. Take the objector first. I've got D. Georgie. Okay. Can I ask what the D stands for?
It's my surname, actually, so Georgie is my first name.
Oh, great. Okay, so it's Georgie somewhat. Can I call you Georgie?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Georgie, you have 3 minutes, so you're speaking objection to this application. I'll let you know when you've used two of those minutes.
Thank you. Okay. Good evening, everybody. The officer's report acknowledges concerns regarding barking and disturbance raised by local residents. However, no acoustic assessment has been undertaken and no objective evidence has been provided to establish either the existing noise environment or the likely impact of the proposal. The conclusion, therefore, appears to rely on assumptions rather than measurable evidence. The recommendation relies heavily on operational controls such as booking limits, restricted opening hours, and assumptions about user behaviour. There's no mechanism for monitoring compliance or enforcing these conditions in practice. The acceptability of the development, therefore, depends on factors that can't be reliably controlled. The neighbouring farm have concerns regarding drainage. The fencing already erected appears to restrict access to a drainage ditch, for which they may have riparian and maintenance responsibilities. The application doesn't adequately explain how future maintenance and drainage infrastructure will be achieved, and restricting access could adversely affect drainage management and potentially increase flood risk. Another concern is the impact on neighbouring livestock. A dog exercise field will generate a continual flow of dogs and visitors throughout the day, even where physical separation is provided by fencing. Dogs can cause significant stress and disturbance to livestock, with implications for animal welfare and farm management. Neighbouring farms are also concerned about biosecurity risks arising from numerous dogs and visitors arising from different locations. This proposal contributes to the ongoing loss of agricultural land across Staffordshire. There has also not been a demonstration of any unmet need for this facility, particularly when several dog exercise businesses already operate in the wider area. The site is accessed via narrow rural lanes that are single vehicle width in places and are already affected by deteriorating edges, potholes and seasonal flooding. Additional traffic associated with the commercial dog exercise business will inevitably increase conflict on roads that were not
at
this level of activity. The site access remains located close to a blind bend on a 60 mile an hour road. Visibility splays and hedge removal may provide mitigation, but they do not change the fundamental characteristics of the road. The proposal is also not served by a safe pedestrian route. Residents from nearby Marston Grange Estate wanting to walk there would be forced onto the carriageway because there's no continuous footpath. Local residents are aware of several accidents and incidents on these roads in recent years, and we do not believe sufficient weight has been given to the cumulative impact on highway safety. Finally, this is not an isolated site. It sits close to a residential properties and to St Leonard's Church, a Grade 2 listed building. Whilst visual effects has been considered, there's been limited assessment of the effect that increased noise activity could have on residents' enjoyment of their homes or on church services, funerals and quiet reception.
Thank you very much, Georgie. Thank you. We now have the speaker in support. I've got C. Preston. Can I ask what the C means, or is Preston your first name?
Claire.
Claire's
the C.
Claire?
Yes.
Okay. Can I call you Claire?
You can.
Okay, Claire, you have 3 minutes as well to speak in support of this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. The application before you seeks consent for the change of use of land to a dog walking field. The officer's report identifies all relevant material planning considerations and arrives at a recommendation for approval which is welcomed. Demand for this type of facility has always been high, however demand has significantly increased since the pandemic as due to COVID-19 restrictions many new dog owners were not able to fully socialise their young puppies. Working habits have also changed significantly since lockdown, such as working from home and hybrid working. The facility helps to foster social connections amongst dog owners, which improves mental well-being and helps to reduce loneliness. The facility would provide a service for the local and wider community where dog owners can walk, exercise and train their dog safely. The site benefits from an existing access point of Marston Lane, which will be improved with the removal of a small amount of hedgerow to provide the required visibility space. Staffordshire County Council High-Res Officer raises no objections subject to conditions. As with most facilities of this nature, the scheme includes the provision of 1.9 metre high deer fencing to secure the site. The Council's Conservation Officer confirms that the almost completely permeable appearance of the fencing has very little impact on the openness of the field, and the change of use associated infrastructure would preserve the setting of the Grade 2 listed church. Customer bookings will be managed by an online booking system operated by the applicant, and dog walkers will be able to book a 50-minute slot with a 10-minute window turnaround time. The use of the field will be limited to no more than 2 vehicles, 3 people and 4 dogs at any one time. The environmental health team have restricted the operating hours to Monday to Friday 0800 to 1600 and Saturdays 0800 to 1400 with no openings on Sundays and bank holidays, which the applicant has agreed to. As such, the officer considers the proposal would not result in undue harm to the residential community of surrounding properties.
1 minute to go.
The proposal includes the provision of dog waste disposal bins which will be emptied by the applicant on a regular basis. There are no objections in terms of ecological impacts as a result of the proposal, and the statutory 10% net gain can be met on site. In summary, the application is considered an acceptable and sustainable form of rural diversification, which will support rural economic growth and is supported by local and national planning policy. There are no outstanding material planning considerations, and we would therefore encourage members to approve the scheme in line with officer's recommendation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you. If you could go back, then I will invite Councillor Beattie if you wish to speak. Thank you.
Like a star turn today.
Yes, hogging the limelight.
Shame on me. I'm ready to start.
Okay.
This proposal is being made as acceptable through conditions and assumptions. Please think that through. The officer's report refers to NPPF paragraph 84 and to the local plan. That planning should support sustainable growth and expansion of all types of businesses. And remember, the expansion of all types of businesses and enterprise in rural areas. But what growth do we see in this case? There isn't growth. It's a static business with very limited staffing. In terms of demand, again, no evidence is produced. The applicants say that though there are other dog walking fields within the local area, most users appreciate a variety of dog fields and will regularly travel. Well, I'm not sure that's good for sustainability, but there's no evidence to support this claim. Where is at least a risk and management plan setting out supervision of the site, supervision and control of the animals in relation to passers-by on the adjacent footpath? You can see how close the footpath is to this very high fence, which has already been put up before planning's given. Types of dogs being exercised, the report recognises problems on site in handling dangerous breeds, and then the noise management, and assuring its viability without a further demand to expand the business. Despite no evidence of any site management, the officer believes that the development would not result in unacceptable harm to the living conditions of neighbouring occupiers due to the management of the enterprise. Well, it's not being managed, it's operated on a box lock scheme. It's another assumption. In effect, the acceptability of the development depends on factors that cannot be reliably controlled or enforced. Who will be physically responsible on site for ensuring that the number of dogs, bookings, behaviour of users are controlled? At a parish meeting, the applicant stated that this site would have no regular supervision during opening hours, and that's just been confirmed. Customers would be expected to self-regulate their behaviour. Adherence to the maximum number of people, vehicles and dogs expected at any one session isn't monitored. The NPPF allows small-scale recreation in the countryside so long as it has no adverse impact on the character of the locality or residential amenity or the quiet enjoyment of other users. In this case, the potential is for residents to have no respite from a procession of customers arriving and departing for each hourly changeover. The access remains located adjacent to a blind bend on a 60-mile-an-hour road. The whole length of Marston Lane forms part of the national cycle route. The rural footpath's already been fenced off by the applicants, as we know, without permission, and dogs can come right up to that fence. And no evidence, again, no evidence being provided to refute noise impact. It's a particularly sensitive rural setting with the church adjacent to it, where you have weddings and funerals to consider. The applicant claims that there'll be minimal dog barking, and the claim is it's apparently because the dogs will know each other, which I find slightly amazing, and the high fence isn't in keeping with the rural location. The principles of this development have not been demonstrated with any evidence, yet the committee's been persuaded that the many unsubstantiated assertions must be acceptable. With all these assumptions, how can you safely give approval? There's no produced evidence on need, noise, site management, nor on the proposed enterprise's viability. I respectfully suggest you could refuse the application on the grounds that sustainable rural development's not been demonstrated, the economic sustainability of the enterprise hasn't been evidenced, the likely adverse effects on residents and others' health and quality of life, which is in the NPPF. There's no evidence produced to support the assumptions that there'll be no adverse impacts on residents or other users, churchgoers, walkers, cyclists. It doesn't meet the essential local development needs of the community. It's likely to be detrimental to the amenity of the area. And there's no evidence of it being a rural employment creator. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you. You may stay there if you wish.
Yep.
Okay, you've heard from the officers, you've heard from the supporter, objector, and from the local ward member. Who wants to start? Councillor Louise Nixon.
Thank you, Chair. I have a degree of experience with this. My background is within my family. 30 years of kennels and stables business, where we have 200 dogs, 26 cats, 6 horses across 14 and a half acres of land for 30 years as a family business. And I observed the planning procedure. I've also got an aunt who has created the same sort of business that you have created. So I know the pitfalls. I can tell you from experience, and 30 years of experience with dogs, that fence, dogs would escape from, absolutely. You are opening yourself up to accidents, especially with the bend in the road. You would need signage because dogs would escape. You've got a problem with the livestock of the farms nearby. So there is a highway issue here, and we need to protect the neighbouring farms because they're having enough problems as it is at the moment. And I say that with deep understanding of the practical day-to-day running of a business of that kind, where dogs are walked across open fields, because I did it for years and it was part of our family business. I don't say that lightly.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Councillor Jill Hood.
This is really interesting, isn't it? I don't think in all the years I've been on the planning committee we've ever had a dog field, dog exercising field brought before us. I totally disagree with Councillor Nixon. Looking at the times, for most dogs that would be on that field throughout the hours would be 40 dogs. That's highly unlikely, because we know that no one is allowed to walk more than four dogs in a group. It is illegal to walk four plus dogs. Councillor Beattie has mentioned dangerous breeds. I just think it beggars belief to say that. I am an avid dog walker and I go to Trentham every morning. I have never seen a dangerous breed at Trentham, which is a massively popular area for dog walkers. I think dog owners are extremely responsible. I cannot see anyone turning up there with a dangerous breed. We've got very few dangerous breeds in Staffordshire anyway. And I think it's a very good idea that we're going to have an area where a dog can be walked off lead or on lead, whichever the responsible dog owner decides to do. I've looked at the fence and I think that the fence is quite adequate to keep a dog in that field. We're talking about all sizes of dogs, and I do support this planning application. Thank you, Chairman.
Councillor Scott Spencer, then I'll take you and Lydia.
A couple of queries really. The non-policed sort of status of the business, that does concern me slightly as what has been raised as to how it is going to be policed, that people are being responsible with, that the onus is on the users, and I'm just a bit concerned how that would, you know, be resolved or be
the responsibility would lie with the dog owner, I guess, to take control of their dog. I don't personally own a dog, but I can't imagine any dog owner is going to want to go to a facility like this and let their dog cause any kind of trouble that they're there to exercise. So the onus would be on the owner to ensure that their dog is kept on a lead or let to run free if that's acceptable to that dog. It depends on the dog.
Okay, and I know we did have another one of these come to us previously, and it was next to a railway track, and sort of the noise there was sort of not really thought was an issue because the railway track sort of trumped it, as it were. So I'm just wondering, why has there not been a noise assessment completed on this application in this instance?
So I think, given that it's a fairly small scale activity, we're only talking about four dogs at any given time.
Okay.
We're not talking any more than four. It's limited what noise is going to be generated from four dogs. Environmental Health have been consulted on this and they are happy with the proposal, subject to the hours that was mentioned in the presentation. Obviously the hours that are set out are 8 till 6 Monday to Friday, 8 till 2 on a Saturday, and not at all on Sundays or bank holidays. So I think it's fair to say that, in terms of residential amenity, certainly Sundays, bank holidays and Saturday afternoons, that field wouldn't be used.
And as a follow-up, sorry, just quickly on the same point, if it was found out that it was creating an issue, is that something that could be enforceable?
If there was a noise nuisance, then it would go down the route of Environmental Health investigating it.
Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Andy McGorton.
Yeah, all I was going to say is we hear a lot about the struggling rural economy, so I think anything that can increase that will add to it, and it seems to be an innovative idea, and so on that basis I would support it. On the drainage, if you want access to the drainage ditch, all they've got to do is ask the owners to give them a couple of slots and then they can go in and clear that ditch. The only concern I might have is, has it got double gates, so you can't sort of, you shut one gate before you open the other, just so that if you've only got one gate, somebody goes to go out and somebody else's dog can maybe escape. That was the only question I would have.
Try and go back to the
Councillor Jill Hood.
I'd just also like to point out that most responsible dog owners, my insurance for my dog is £162 a month. He is on the lead all the time. If I were walking through a gate, he would be on a lead. If I was leaving through a gate, he would be on a lead. So if the responsible dog owners who insure their dogs want to hire this field for an hour, I can't see a dog owner being irresponsible enough to let a dog run out of control.
Scott Spender?
I just have another quick point. On, I think it's condition 6 regarding the disposal of sort of the waste. It's been put down to the owner to empty these bins.
Yeah, and that's correct.
Yeah, so the local authority won't be...
No, it would be the responsibility of the owner of the field to...
Would that be done on a regular basis? Can that be put into some sort of... Or
I'm presuming it would be done daily.
Right, okay. So there will be...
Assumptions.
So the owner will... Yeah, I mean, is the owner... When will the owner do these sort of things? I feel that's sort of an issue environmentally. Is that something that can be conditioned that it's kind
of... Well, the condition basically said there would be suitable bins...
Yeah.
Disposal of dog waste on the field and in the car parking areas, and it says as may be agreed in writing with the local planning authority. So we need to get some additional information about those bins.
Yeah.
I mean, we could add into that condition how frequently the bins would be emptied.
I think that would be if we were to accept. Yeah.
Councillor Roy James.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Councillor makes a very good point sort of about responsible dog owners where she has adequate insurance for her dogs. So my question is the operator, how is the operator going to ensure that the people using this facility are insured? And should, if it's not there, should it not be in the conditions?
I don't think we can condition that only insured dogs can use that field. Again, that falls within the responsibility of the actual dog owner. I don't think that it's not really a planning matter. I don't think we can condition that.
Louise Nixon.
I just want to make a point that we're talking about 4 dogs going into that field. Different breeds of dogs will behave in different ways on that field. For example, if they're 4 golden retrievers, they're likely to behave very well. But if it's something like 4 beagles, they're likely to begin together as a pack, separate out, and while somebody's trying to deal with an issue with one, the other one would be looking over the fence. And that's just different types and breeds of dogs.
Scott?
So, Councillor Lipson, are you saying by that comment that you feel that the fence isn't adequate in its current state?
Yeah.
Any more?
Yep. Sorry, Chair. Just on point 11 in the conditions, it mentions about no floodlighting, and but then goes on to say, or what later on, then maybe they can apply for lighting and so forth. If we were to mind to approve this, can that condition be reworded to just have no floodlighting or external lighting shall be permitted, full stop?
We can do that. I mean, the condition basically says that they shouldn't install any floodlighting at the site unless they put the details in first.
Yes.
But we can amend that condition if you feel that it would be more appropriate just to say no floodlighting.
I think for myself, to preserve the level of amenity and so forth and to kind of reduce the impact, go into the future, I feel that would be a good rewording, yes.
I'll support Scott's amendment on that one.
So you would prefer the condition to read no floodlighting should be installed or operated at the site at any time?
No floodlighting or lighting.
Okay. Right, so we need to vote on that condition now.
Yeah.
So you say no floodlighting
or lighting.
Or lighting.
No lighting, full stop.
Supported by Councillor Roy James. All in favour of that condition?
One,
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Okay, any against?
Yes.
Nope, okay. So, anyone else wish to speak? Or make a proposal?
Speak not to make a proposal. With regard to fencing, Councillor Nixon brought up, are we satisfied that it is at the correct level and type to maintain certain dogs that are going to be...
The fencing proposed is 1.9 metres in height. I don't know much about dogs, not as much as Councillor Nixon.
I don't know, so I asked the question.
I could provide a response to that in that within the family business we have pens, so that the top of it, when the metal strips were smaller, and then when you got to the top, it came over. So with that the way it is, there would be a climb up and pop over. But the way we had ours, it went up and then it went this way, so the dog wouldn't be able to climb on its back upside down. If that makes sense.
Councillor Jill Hood.
Yeah, this is deer fencing, not kangaroo fencing. There's very few dogs that will climb that height of fence.
Would just like to add that we have approved several other dog walking fields within the borough, and they are mentioned within the report, and I think this is sort of standard type of fencing that is used. Obviously in terms of visual impact, it's the best sort of fencing you can get. It's transparent, it sits comfortably in a rural location, it is 1.9 metres high. I'm not sure what sort of dog could jump over a 1.9 metre high fence, but I don't know.
Councillor Scott Spencer.
Back on the condition, condition 5 then, with regard to the disposal, can we add in a frequency statement?
So we could say that before the development is bought, first put into use, suitable receptacles for disposal of waste and details of the frequency of the bins being empty shall be provided. So we could just slot that bit in.
Yep.
Need a second at
that. Okay. Anyone want to second that?
Sorry, can you just say that one again?
Just to add in a frequency timescale for the emptying of the bins to stop any kind of overflow and to ensure that the owner, the running of the site, comes, attends, empties the bins on a regular basis.
I'll support that.
Do you want to define what the regular basis might be?
Well,
in terms of
daily. Do you think daily? Daily reasonable?
Basically, the way the condition will be worded, we'll be asking for information about where the bins will be located and information about the frequency of bins being emptied.
I suppose it depends on the capacity of the bins that have been provided, doesn't it?
So that's something we would have to assess, and we could liaise with environmental health, but I think daily seems sensible.
Okay.
To vote on that one then? All those in favour of that condition or amendment? Okay, good. So, anyone want to bring anything different in? Or make a proposal? Andy McFarlane?
I'm not totally accept it with the agreed conditions. Or agree with the agreed conditions.
Anyone wish to second that?
I'll second that,
sir. Councillor Jill Hood seconds. We'll take the vote to approve the application subject to those amended conditions.
What the amendments, please?
Well, you've just said that.
So there'll be two amendments, one to condition 5. So there's a condition asking for details to be provided of basically bins for dogs, but we'd also be asking for details of how frequent those bins will be emptied, so that will be added into condition 5. Condition 11 is lighting, so we would be saying no flood lighting or lighting should be installed or operated at the site at any time. It would be the second part of condition 11 will be deleted.
Yeah. Okay, understand that? Take a vote on it then. You've heard the amendments and that proposal. Okay, to approve. Shall we put our hands up or otherwise? Okay, that is approved, subject to that. minor.
Abstention.
Any objections to that or abstentions? Okay, so we now go on to planning application 25/41424, Squirrel Barn, Salmon Lake, Minich. You are leaving us. Please do quietly. Okay, who's going to open this one? Hannah? Yeah? Yeah, when you're ready. Okay.
So the site subject to this application, known as Squirrel Barn, comprises one of a pair of semi-detached dwellings located in the rural settlement of Millich. The dwelling is a former agricultural building which was converted to residential use and is curtilage listed to the Grade 2 listed Millich Hall, which is located to the south of the site. The current application follows an enforcement investigation where it is established that the property has undergone an unauthorised change of use from a Class C3 residential dwelling to use as a holiday let. The current application seeks permission for the use of the dwelling for holiday let accommodation only, with no external alterations proposed. So the site is shown there, edged in red. An aerial view of the site. And then we've got an indication of where the photographs were taken on site. So image one, this is showing the access off Sandon Lane. The access is also provides access to Millich Hall, which you can just see the gates in the distance. Image two shows the parking area to Squirrel Barn. And that side elevation, you can just see the entrance there. Image three, again showing the side elevation, and then there's access to the driveway to Swallow Barn there, which is the adjacent property. Showing again on image four. Image 5 showing a view towards Millich Hall from the adjacent property yard at Swallow Barn. Image 6 showing the rear elevation to the site at Squirrel Barn. And these are the plans. So this is the site location plan showing the site edged in red with access from Sandon Lane. The existing parking provision. This is the existing ground floor, so the extent of Squirrel Barn is shown edged red, where that hashed red line is, and the rest is the neighbouring property, Swallow Barn. So the first floor you can see is pretty much divided equally between the two properties. The existing roof plan, and just for context, the existing elevations. But there are no external alterations under this application. So in terms of issues, the key issues relate to the impact of the proposal upon the amenities of neighbouring occupiers in terms of noise and disturbance, as well as parking and highway safety. However, subject to the conditions listed in the report, which includes a limit on the number of guests to be accommodated at the site, officers are satisfied that the proposals comply with the relevant national and local policies, and it's recommended that planning permission be granted. No further updates.
Thank you, Hannah. Thank you. So we have an objector to speak on this. That will be Janine Edwards.
Good evening.
Can I call you Janine?
Of course.
Thank you.
Of course.
So you have 3 minutes.
Okay.
Let me know when you want to go.
Okay, thank you. Squirrel Barn is the historic stable block which served Grade II listed building, Milich Hall, a site dating back to the 16th century. The individual entrance gates to each property are fairly close to each other, approximately 8 feet apart. The application fails to adequately assess and mitigate the effect of commercial holiday accommodation within a building that forms part of the listed asset, and fails to demonstrate compliance with national and local heritage policies requiring special regard to the preservation of listed buildings and their settings. Previous activities at Squirrel Barn, operating as a holiday let hotel, as per their advertising, caused a number of problems. It increased visitor activity, vehicle movements on a drive which belongs to Milich Hall, which the applicants have limited rights to, as well as noise, external coloured lighting and spotlights. In addition, there was associated domestic paraphernalia, hot tub, decking and children's playground, including a zip wire which were totally inappropriate to the rural and historic character of the location. The holiday let business was marketed towards large family groups, emphasising the property's suitability for outside activities. The disturbance to our enjoyment of our home through the activities were substantial and unreasonable, and we have believed constituted a private nuisance. We believe that the activities will continue as before if the application is granted. Although the applicants were aware of the issues with nearby residents, there were no changes undertaken to reduce the disturbances, so neighbouring residents found it necessary to modify their living arrangements. The land registry entries for Squirrel Barn also contain a restrictive covenant not to carry on any trade or business, which highlight the fact that the location is unsuitable for commercial use. The case officer's report acknowledges the enforcement action currently imposed on Squirrel Barn and does attempt to address some concerns. However, previous planning committees have experienced complexities with comparable applications.
1 minute.
Okay, and have found that the conditions of monitoring and enforcement, if any, were not successful. There are also infrastructure issues that have not been properly assessed. The initial application cited the property was on main sewers. This has since been corrected by the planning officers to septic tank. How can the current infrastructure cope with frequent change of holiday guests, not to say any additional guests that arrive in the late evening for party time? In addition, issues with the private access drive have been considerable. Substantial damage has occurred due to the constant commercial vehicle movements. The access drive, which forms part of the listed curtilage of Milich Hall, is only intended for residential use only, and Squirrel Barn does not have a right to park on it or place commercial bins on it. It is not suitable for intense vehicle movements which will arise from holiday let use. The area on the application plan marked shared access is not within the curtilage of Squirrel Barn, and we object strongly to permission being given for change of use of our driveway. Furthermore, the highways report on this application clearly expresses its concern that the access was not intended for such commercial use.
I do ask you to drive wider.
Okay.
Thank you.
Therefore, I ask the committee to carefully consider whether the application is compatible with the historic character of Milich Hall and its rural and agricultural setting, the private access issue, the unaddressed infrastructure issues, and the considerable issues previously experienced relating to nuisance in such a quiet and rural setting.
Thank
so
you.
Thank you for allowing me to make my views.
Thank you very much. If you want to go back. Councillor Beattie, once more.
Me again. I'm not doing very well so far. So we address Squirrel Barn. I've been closely involved for nearly 3 years in trying to help the neighbours address a raft of problems being caused by the operators of a multitude of unauthorised activities at Squirrel Barn. The applicant flouts the rules and ignores conditions. These buildings are part of a historically important Tudor origin Staffordshire farmstead. The Heritage Officer's report perhaps best opens the window to the illicit, unneighbourly and largely unchecked activity taking place at this historic property over years. A report exudes concern about the heritage security of the barns. In summary, she says that the application form states that the use has not commenced. This is not correct. Your property has in fact been operating unlawfully as a holiday let for several years
and has been advertised as accommodating up to 18 persons. The present application has been submitted following an active enforcement inquiry into the unauthorised use of the site. Unauthorised works have been carried out to both Squirrel Barn and Swallow Barn, as well as within their curtilage. She notes, the heritage officer notes, that the applicant's heritage statement asserts that the building's not curtilage listed, when it clearly is. The applicant's report should be ignored. Legislation directs that applications must identify affected heritage assets, assess their significance, and demonstrate how proposals will conserve and enhance them. That's not been done. By refusing to address the heritage aspects of the application could not promote or enhance the borough's historic character through sensitive management, as is required by law. At first floor level, Squirrel Barn and Squirrel Barn and Swallow Barn are interconnected, and an additional bedroom could accommodate further people. The heritage officer's strongly worded request was that the first floor door opening be permanently blocked, but it can't be addressed in this application, so officers have tried to address it with conditions controlling guest numbers. Most disturbingly, the heritage officer's report does not give out any confidence in the likelihood of owner compliance with conditions without robust controls. She adds, the current proposal must be considered in the context of the ongoing enforcement matters and the unauthorised alterations that have caused harm to the significance and character of the curtilage listed building. You'll have noted the highway's response recommending refusal, and we have the neighbours' concerns. Importantly, the area on the application plan marked shared access is not within the curtilage at Squirrel Barn, and the landowner objects to permission being given for change of use of the land. There's none compliance with deeds of covenant. There's long-standing lack of site management and control by the owners, which has been evidenced by the excessive noise, the invasive external lighting, and the failure to engage with neighbours. I respectfully offer material reasons to refuse. The NPPF states that applications must identify affected heritage assets, assess their significance, and demonstrate how proposals will conserve or enhance them through sensitive management. By refusing to address the heritage aspects, the applicants cannot do this. The scheme's not in accordance with the local plan policy E2. It's detrimental to the residential rural amenity. The holiday let will harm the amenities enjoyed by the occupiers of neighbouring dwellings. The proposed development is contrary to the objectives and policies contained within the NPPF, and it's contrary to the interests of highway safety. It will prejudice the safe and efficient use of the highway network. In support of the adjacent landowner's objection to permission being given for change of use of the land, because the area on the application plan marked shared access is not within the curtilage of Squirrel Barn.
You have 1 minute.
The applicant's history demonstrates the significant risk that conditions designed to mitigate harm will not be complied with, referenced by previous breaches of planning and listed building controls. Too often, approved planning conditions are not enforced. The unauthorised activities at this property have been hugely costly for the council, for the neighbours, and a cause of severe stress and distress to neighbours. If approval were to be given to this application, adherence to its conditions would have to be at the top of a watch list for our enforcement officers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Beattie. Thank you very much. Well, just to remind you that we only deal with the application here. We can't be speaking about any enforcement that may or may not be taking place. So if you concentrate on the application itself, who wants to start first? Councillor Hargan, always rely on you, Councillor Spencer.
I think Councillor Beattie makes some interesting and good points here. I am certainly drawn in by the heritage comments and conservation issues and so forth. Has the conservation officer has issues with this? We can see that already, and he's mentioned about, or she has mentioned about, blocking up doors, so there's already been significant issues with the use as it is to the harm to the heritage asset. does that have a bearing on this application? Should it be looked into in more detail?
So this application is looking purely at the change of use. We're not looking at the alteration. So Councillor Beattie spoke about various unauthorised works that have taken place at the Squirrel Barn. This application is not here to assess those. It's here simply to look at the use of the property as a holiday let, to which the conservation officer raises no objection.
So, sorry, just to follow up. So the conservation officer has no issue with the change of use as such, but does have issue with
what occurred prior.
Yeah.
So that would need to come under a separate application. The alterations would need to be looked at separately, but this application is for change of use.
Yeah.
Okay. Councillor Andy McNaughton.
Yeah, I've just read the Parish Council, their opinion. They make some sensible suggestions in that they're minded to approve the recommendation, but they want things like an organised complaints procedure, quiet time, one or two conditions like that. And then I think that might be a sensible path to follow.
Thank you. Well, James?
Can I just question the access, please? Can you explain that a bit more detail? As I understand it, Squirrel Barn doesn't own that access, and there's a covenant on that?
So the covenant wouldn't be upon in consideration.
Right, okay.
Based on the application form submitted, the applicant has served notice on the owners of that access at Millage Hall. So procedurally, we consider that this is valid, this application is valid, and can proceed to determination on that basis.
So Squirrel Barn has no right to use that road, is that correct?
I believe they have access rights over it.
Access rights, who? The people who own it or the business?
I'm not sure.
Can the owner responds with facts.
So, as owners of Millage Hall,
just if you're going to say something, it's just for clarification.
Okay. As owners of Millage Hall, we own the drive. The only right that Squirrel and Swallow Farm have is to pass and to repass. They have no other right, it's for residential use. So, they can't block the drive, they can't put anything on the drive. They can't use it commercially because it's covenanted by residential, and they can't have a business or trade.
Thank you. That's clarification.
Thank you. You want to just say something there about the legal, John? They have the legal. They haven't spoken much yet.
It's not a material planning consideration. It won't affect your ability to determine the change of use today. That would be a private matter.
Okay. Just to have an understanding of that then, if I've got it right, access is permitted to Squirrel Barn as a residential property, but not as a holiday let, which is the subject of this planning application tonight, the change of use. But the legal part is not anything that we have any powers over. We are dealing with the planning application. Come on, don't be shy.
You're going to hate me, Mr. Chairman. I move to refuse.
Right. Did you want to speak before?
If it's all possible. Yeah, just a quick one. Obviously, we see from the plans that the two properties are interlinked, which is presumably meant why they managed to have 18 guests or more at any one time. So my thoughts are, I know it's listed, so therefore we can't block up that without an expedition application. Can it be ensured that the other property cannot be accessed from, the Swallow Barn cannot be accessed from Squirrel Barn throughout the entirety of its use if we were to vote for it to be approved?
I have had confirmation from the applicant that those existing doors are lockable.
Okay. Right.
However, how enforceable that would be given their internal doors is questionable.
But there is a limit of 6 people in the holiday let.
That's what we're suggesting, yeah.
Anyone wish to speak? Councillor Jill Hood?
So, can we actually say that we agree with only 6 people as part of this plan? I mean, there's so much here, so much information, yet really it's just a smidgen of what we can actually comment on and vote on or propose.
Well, the officers have sort of said that 6 they believe is an appropriate number, which may be similar to numbers that you could have as a residential property, I guess. Councillor Andy McDonald.
Are any suggestions by the parish council planning considerations, such as quiet time and consent procedure? Are they conditions that could be put on the application?
Yeah, so we did look at that under the report. So at section 4.8, we stated whilst the complaints procedure could be put in place by the applicants, this would not necessarily stop occurrences taking place in the first instance, which is why we suggested the condition on the guest numbers. So it wouldn't necessarily stop those occurrences taking place.
What's about quiet time? I don't know what happens. No noise after 11 or 10.
It would be a similar issue.
As a commercial property, we can have limits on the time it can be used, I guess, can't we? Or, you know, opening hours if it were a pub.
Well, obviously staying there, so, you know, it's a bit more difficult to put a time limit on when someone's staying overnight.
Or external activities. Councillor Jill Hood?
It does actually say that the parish council would, in principle, recommend allowing the change of use.
Yeah. We haven't got a rep from the parish council here at the moment, have we?
No, they've not been interested in it at all.
Okay. Any more comments or questions or proposals?
I'll just propose for refuse.
Okay.
We need a second, we need a planning reason as well for the refusal.
Boys proposing refusal. Did we get a seconder on that?
We need a planning reason.
And a planning reason.
Okay. For refusal.
Before it goes to a seconder?
Yeah, because I don't know what the seconder is.
Okay. Right, so Roy, you have to think of some planning reason why the committee might wish to follow your proposal.
Can you have the ones I've given you?
Sorry?
Can you have the ones I've given you? Is he allowed to receive my...
Yes. So
can you call planning reasons?
You can plagiarise whatever Councillor Beattie has said, but you have to say it.
With all due respect, I don't think we should be taking opinions.
Yes, okay, yeah. Just noted.
Okay. What is the suggested reason for refusal?
Well, you've got the issues of access to the property, and the fact there is a covenant on, or, although you can't use the covenant, is it's being used as a business, and it's not supposed to do that.
That would be a legal matter rather than a planning matter.
So you're shifting the emphasis back to the owner of Millick Hall.
We don't have any control over covenants from a planning point of view, unfortunately.
Scott?
Yeah. I think looking at it, if a refusal was proposed, as I see it from all the different bodies that have been sort of, you know, put in comments, the only one appears to be is highways. But I think the strength of that as a refusal could
be overturned relatively easy, and I think that's difficult and not a particularly strong argument. So I'd be concerned if we would refuse on that basis.
So if, sorry, for your chair, if you're minded to refuse, you need to demonstrate what the harm is going to be. But you need to be mindful that if the applicant chooses to take this to appeal and they succeed, then there will probably be a cost awarded against the council. But there's always that risk.
Okay. It goes back to the definition of harm, doesn't it? Which I keep asking and don't get a positive, clear answer.
So I can understand that you're wanting to refuse it on the basis of the access.
Access and harm,
and the issues,
yeah.
And the issues surrounding that, but that isn't a planning consideration, so the harm has to be based on what is a material planning consideration.
Councillor Scott Spencer.
For everyone's benefit, could loss of amenity to surrounding properties regarding noise disturbance and so forth be considered as a material condition?
That is a material consideration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We did have something similar, didn't we, where there was accommodation for people in bungalows next door to residential properties at Highfields in Stafford. That's where there was an objection to the added number of bungalows because of the problems caused previously.
Can I get a point of clarification there? That would be policy E2 of the local plan.
Okay, I'll have to stop you from...
Thank you.
Okay, right. So is that a material planning consideration?
Yes.
That it would cause harm to the adjacent property?
Property. I'm thinking out loud, really. And if that's material consideration is strong enough to, if it were to go to appeal, would it be sufficient? In this case, do we think?
Well, that's a matter for you to decide.
A fairly
detailed section in the report about residential amenity, paragraphs 4.1 right through to 4.13, where residential amenity has been considered in every detail, and the conclusion is that it would be acceptable based on the number of occupants there. So that is the conclusion we've come to as officers based on the submission, and it is fairly thorough in terms of its assessment.
I suppose it is counter to that. It's based on a six-person family home as such, not necessarily a, in inverted commas, party house could be, or the continually, the use, I think, of a holiday let and a house and a home is two different levels of certainly outdoor use, potentially. I don't know, maybe slightly more rowdy, for want of a better word, but I appreciate it's difficult to...
Yeah, I mean, it's all about who's actually renting it. It could be a very... quiet group of people or otherwise.
Indeed.
Sorry, Susan.
Chair, I was just going to come in there. So, just clarifying, this is a planning balance at the end of the day. So obviously there's factors that we've determined in favour of the application, and obviously factors that not in favour of the application. So we've come to a conclusion in terms of the balance that generally it's acceptable. It's for planning committee to determine whether you want to go with that. Obviously, we've spoken about if it gets to an appeal situation, it may be overturned. But at the end of the day, you can apply a balance just as officers apply a balance, and you can come to a different conclusion.
Jill Hood?
Yeah, I'm concerned that we are, as a planning committee, trying to do the work of the owners who could bring a legal action you know, maybe it's up to them. I'm reluctant to go with the refusal because that's how I feel. That this really, I don't want to say it isn't our concern, but you've pointed out that we can't consider things like noise, complaints, that we're actually just focusing on the plumbing condition.
Right, where do we go? We haven't had a second for the
Councillor Hood.
Proposal.
Sorry, we can consider noise, that is a consideration. I think the part that we were saying we could consider related more to the access drive only being accessible for a residential use. But no, noise is a material planning consideration. Yeah. Sorry, I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you.
Sorry, through you, Chair, just to say again that is an impact on the amenity of the area as well.
So if you're looking at page 29, 4.13, that's where the officers have considered the harm and weighed it and decided that there's no significant harm to the neighbouring properties. Is that right?
That's correct. There's nothing stopping committee from disagreeing with the officers, but you just have to be pretty clear in what you're saying and be mindful of the fact that if it does go to appeal and we lose, then we'll have costs against us. It's a balance, as Susan said.
Roy?
Can I just ask, it would seem that If I want to uphold a refusal, then I need to come up with the right answers.
If you want to refuse, you have to have the refusal based on a material planning consideration.
Right. I don't believe I've got enough time to do that today, so do we defer the application?
Well, I think Councillor Spencer was coming up with something. I can't put words in your mouth, sorry.
No, I was certainly thinking of ways of wording of something that you could, that would not land us in issues when it came to, dispute with ourselves. Because I think if we put together planning reason which seemed reasonable, then we wouldn't potentially be cost would be awarded against us because we'd have come up with reasonable planning considerations, as I understand it. If we just come up with, well, we don't like it because, then cost would be attributed.
So if you look at page 29 at 4.13, you might take a different view to the officers. And you could say that you consider there would be harm because it is a consideration by officers. As Susha said, it's a balance, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Sure, and just to pick up on that point, I mean, your concerns about when we get to an appeal situation.
I think to have robust, yeah.
Yeah, but here, because it is a balance rather than a clear-cut, one way or the other way, you're going against a strong officer recommendation. As you say, it's a balance, so that's... You're not going to be mitigating factor in that?
Again, what Councillor James has said, and maybe a refusal line could be for residential amenity and noise based on what's happened before, because clearly there has been issues in the past. So I think that the officer's saying, or the recommendation says, oh, it's only going to be for Dorcas and Charles in a tranquil retreat. Clearly that hasn't been the case, and that may be the case, not be the case going forward as well. So I feel that maybe two reasons would be amenity of loss of and noise potential.
Yeah. Jill Hood.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I just wonder if we could have a look at paragraph 4.7.
Okay. Who wants to go through that? A noise management plan be secured by a condition. Is that what you're looking at?
4.7, where they requested a noise management plan in a similar situation, but the inspector found that the noise reduction measures, such as a curfew for use of outdoor areas, is only likely to be managed reactively and thus would not stop occurrences at the outset.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, in that case, the inspector did attach a condition on guest numbers, and we've taken that's why we've taken this approach.
It's a bit like going around in circles, trying to protect ourselves against an appeal.
So we've limited numbers now to 6 maximum at any one time. There will be times when it's unoccupied, I guess, as well. There is an issue of the harm to amenity or noise. Is that, we've got that? Yeah, those are kind of areas where we might land.
So if we say refusal on the basis of impact on amenity and noise concerns, that is good enough
to
to refuse.
Yeah, but you need a seconder now.
I need a seconder.
So we know where Stop. You're coming from in terms of why you want to refuse it. Who wants to second that, if anyone, to refuse? Louise, are going to second that to refuse? So we need to take a vote on refusing it for those reasons that we've just been summarising.
Yep. Loss of amenity and disturbance and noise.
Okay, everyone understand that? So on that basis, how do you want to vote? Refuse?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, thanks very much. I would go refuse on that basis as well. Any against that or abstentions? 3 against. Okay, so that's refused because of amenity impact on neighbouring properties. Okay. Next one. Where are we now? Oh, we're going to Barlaston. Land west of Old Road, Barlaston. Application number 254019/PIP. Okay, take the conversation outside. Thank you. Okay, who's taking this one?
This one's
me. Okay, Sean.
Okay, this is application 254019. Before I go through the presentation, we've had one additional update, an additional letter since the agenda was published. We had a letter from an MP raising an objection to the proposal on the grounds that the site is an open countryside and in the green belt. The letter also states that the developer has not demonstrated a sufficient need for the housing. And he also fears that the proposal could lead to a larger scheme.
I can't hear you.
Sorry.
Can't hear you.
Do you want me to repeat that again?
Yes, please.
We've had an additional letter from an MP raising objections to the proposal on the ground that the site is an open countryside and in the green belt. The letter also states that the developer has not demonstrated a sufficient need for the housing, and that there's also fear that the proposal could lead to a larger scheme. In fact, that's an additional objection letter that we received. So moving on to the presentation, this application is an application for permission in principle for the construction of up to 5 dwellings on a parcel of land to the west
and rear of 9 to 19 Old Road. The site is outside of the settlement boundary and is located on the North Staffordshire Greenbelt. The permission in principle route has two stages. The first stage, the PIP, which is this application, establishes whether a site is suitable in principle, and the second stage is when we receive a detailed development proposals and they're assessed under what's called the technical details consent stage. So at this stage, the PIP stage, the applicant is not required or expected to supply any detailed plans. However, the planning statement for this PIP application does state that the proposed dwellings would be bungalows and would be designed to be compatible with the character and appearance of the area. And these details will be submitted at the technical details consent stage. So under a PIP, you're limited what you can consider. The scope of the permission in principle is limited to location, land use and amount of development. And it should also be noted that it is not possible with a PIP application for conditions to be attached to a grant of permission, nor can we secure any planning obligations at this stage. You'll note in the officer report under section 5 that the permission in principle route is considered to be acceptable for this proposal. So as previously noted, we are limited to looking at location, land, use and amount of development. So looking at those three points, they have been set out in quite a detailed report. But location-wise, the site is outside the settlement boundary, and given that we can no longer demonstrate a five-year housing land supply, the tilted balance is applied, and limited weight is afforded to the plan for Stafford Borough, and the proposal is assessed against the MPPF and the presumption in favour of sustainable development. So the site is also in the Greenbelt, and the five purposes of the Greenbelt are set out in paragraph 6.16 of the officer report. So the applicant has stated in this submission that the land is Greybelt land. The MPPF defines Greybelt land as Greenbelt land comprising previously developed land and or other land that does not strongly contribute to any of the purposes of the Greenbelt as set out in the MPPF. These points are detailed in the report. Greybelt land does exclude land where the application of policies relating to areas of assets, which are set out in footnote 7 of the MPPF, would provide a strong reason for refusing. So that would be such as irreplaceable habitats or heritage concerns. So the site in question, as you can see, is edged red on the plan you can see in front of you. It's not previously developed land, however, it's not considered that the application site makes a strong contribution towards restricting urban sprawl, nor does it make a strong contribution to preserving the setting and special character of the historic town. It's therefore been concluded that the proposed development does comprise Greybelt land and would not fundamentally undermine the purposes of the Greenbelt. It's also included that there's a demonstrable need for development in Stafford Borough, given that we have a lack of a five-year housing land supply. Given the location of the site adjacent to the settlement of Barlaston, which has a number of services and facilities, the site is considered to be in a sustainable location. The proposed development is up to five dwellings on a site area of 0.99 hectares. This is classed as major development as defined in the MPPF, and consequently the golden rules which apply to the Greenbelt must apply. So these relate to affordable housing, infrastructure and green space. All of these matters would be considered at the technical details consent stage. It's considered that five dwellings on a site of this size is low density. In addition, matters relating to flood risk, highways, ecology and biodiversity net gain are all dealt with at the detailed consent stage. Having regard to the development plan, the MPPF and the consultee responses and other material considerations, it's concluded that the site is suitable for residential development in principle. So if we run through the slides, the red edge plan shows the site, and you can see that it's accessed from Old Road. I think we skipped the area. There we go. There is the aerial view. The site access is from Old Road. We've got a number of photographs. It's going too fast for me. Each one is looking along the proposed access towards the rear of 19 Old Road.
Back in the old days, we'd say put a shilling in the meter.
The old days, we'd have some problems.
About a laptop, that's why it's not working.
We've got it here on Scott's.
It might have, yeah.
Can you link it in to that screen?
How long is the HDMI cable?
You could have to get on the.
Same with photographs.
You just tapped into the entire system.
Yeah, I'll wait for it. Just contact Elon Musk.
Just want to log in the screen.
Oh, there's booting.
Oh, he's on there.
Thank you. Can I just ask, is he here before we go? Are you just sort of comfort break?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll adjourn the meeting temporarily while you're here. Can we do that?
You can, yeah.
Yes.
Stop the recording.
Okay.